Okay, we're up to the last paragraph in Perek Beis, Mishnah Dalid. Al da'atef atfuch. That's where it's the Nekudis. What? That's Mishnah. Mishnah Vav, I apologize, yeah. Mishnah Vav, al da'atef avidya. Two paragraphs. Oyal derech. We're up to the second paragraph. I mentioned when we learned the previous paragraph that there's a significant machlekes rishayim as to whether it's possible to harm someone who is not supposed to be harmed from min hashamayim. Now, the argument is if you hurt someone or you know, if Reuven kills Shimon, whether we could say Shimon would have died anyway, because you can't kill somebody if he's not supposed to die. So the opinion of the Rambam and the Chinuch, and that's Ruchaim Voloshin follows that opinion, is that it's really not possible to kill somebody if he's not supposed to die. You can try to kill somebody, I mean, not you, but Reuven could try to kill Shimon, but if his time is not up, he's not going to die. And therefore, if Reuven did, in fact, kill Shimon, so Reuven's guilty for having been the one to kill him, but in fact, Shimon would have died anyhow. That's the approach of the Rambam and the Chinuch. The Alshuch and the Rechaim HaKadosh, a number of others disagree, and say that it is possible. The insight is that there are two basic concepts in Yiddishkeit that come into contradiction here. One is the concept of free will, that every human being has bechira, can do things, so to speak, outside of what Hashem said should happen. You have free will. That would seem to mean that any Jew has the ability to kill another Jew because he has free will. He can kill whoever he wants. Another concept is that people don't die unless their time has come. Unless a person doesn't even injure himself, unless it's nigzar alav min hashamayim that he should injure himself. If that's the case, then it would seem that nobody could hurt another person based on his free will. Because there's this idea that ein adam nekev etzbay milmata, elim ke mechrizin alav milmailo, which means a person doesn't bang his finger down here unless it was a gzeira upstairs. So the question is, which one of these two concepts overrides? When Reuven wants to hurt Shimon, do we say he has free will and he can't hurt Shimon? Or do we say no, on Shimon's end, Shimon wouldn't be hurt were it not for the fact that it was nigzar from Shemayim that he'd be hurt, so Reuven's not doing it. And we say if Reuven wouldn't have punched him in the nose and given him a bloody nose, he would have fallen and had a bloody nose anyway.
Could we say that
that's the question?
It's not a contradiction, because just like by a mitzvah, there are two parts. There's schar for doing the mitzvah and schar for wanting to do the mitzvah and not being able to do it. Here, there could be two parts. There's trying to kill somebody and actually killing him, and trying to kill somebody and he doesn't die, and one has
no... So you're being successful in evading the question, because what you're saying is definitely true, but you still have to answer the question. If Reuven killed Shimon, right, was Shimon supposed to die? Or was it Reuven who chose to kill Shimon and succeeded, even though Shimon would otherwise not have died?
If he died, then he was supposed to die. If he
didn't
die,
that's the opinion of the Rambam. The Rambam says that if he died, he was supposed to die.
Right.
And that's what you're saying.
But you get punished
for being the one to do it.
Yeah, regardless.
That's without question, right. It says the opinion of the Rambam and the Chinuch, and Rechaim Voloshin here follows that, is that you can't hurt somebody if he's not supposed to be hurt. You can try and get an instant avera, but you can't hurt somebody. Others disagree, and as I mentioned the other night, it seems to me that the majority opinion is like the Rambam, but Rabbi David Gottlieb, who's specializes in Jewish philosophy in Eretz Yisrael, feels that the majority opinion is the other way. So I didn't actually work on making a complete list, so I wouldn't know. Although I see here Rabbi Chaim Voloshin, it does follow the Rambam's opinion. So, it's an interesting thought, as an aside. Hashem created the world with Asara Mamorim, right? Hashem created in 10 steps of creation. The first 9 steps of creation are totally controlled by God. He created the sun, and he preordained when the sun rises and when it sets. He created the oceans, and it's preordained when the oceans rise and fall. The 10th creation was man. In man, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, here, I restrict my will, I give man free will, I give him Bechira. In one of the ten Mamorim, which Hashem created the world, he gave it away, so to speak. He let man have Bechira. So this is the source for the idea of giving Meiser. It seems to be a universal idea to give a tenth of your money away to worthy people. Because God, in the original creation, gave a tenth of his mamarim, one out of his ten mamarim, he gave away, so to speak, the control to a human being. So too, we emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we give away one out of our ten in Meiser. Futner writes this concept someplace in his mamarim, that Meiser is based on this idea. Gemara also has an expression, Reitze Adam Mekav Shaloi Metisha Kav Mishal Chaver. Gemara has an expression, a person would rather have one measure of his own rather than nine measures of others. So he says that expression also comes from this, that man gets one measure and God has nine measures, so to speak, in creation. So a person has Kav Shaloi, has his one measure, has his control. But all right, that's an aside. The point, though, is that Rechaim V'Lajita goes with the approach that it's not possible to kill somebody if he's not supposed to die. Now, how does that impact this Mishnah? The Mishnah said that he saw a skull floating on the water, and he said that because you killed others, you were killed, and those who killed you will be killed as well. That's the language of the Mishnah. So Rechaim V'Lajita has a bit of a unique way of teaching the Mishnah. Let's see if we can figure it out. Someone born under the mazel of Mars will be a person who spills blood. That's the mazel of the person. So there may be a murderer who will say, he says, my mazel is what caused me to be a murderer because I was born under that mazel. Why should I be punished? So for that, the Tana replies, if the Nerag would not have been guilty from heaven, you would not be successful in killing him. Must be that it was appropriate for him to fall. Let's say he was not supposed to die. What would you have done with your energy to be a Ratzeach? If somebody is born under the stars to have a desire to shed blood, he can become a butcher, he can become a sheichet, he can become a soldier. Turns out that your mazel doesn't force you to murder. It's what you chose to do that forced you. And here, I'm a bit challenged to fit into the Mishnah, how this fits. So I'm scratching my head trying to understand. He says, Al da teft atfuch, literally, because you killed others, you were killed. So I think he's touching it, Al da tfech atfuch, because you were supposed to die, you died. You didn't die earlier than your time. Because you were supposed to die, you died. This person that was killed was supposed to die because of his veiras anyway. Otherwise, he can't kill him. Therefore, those who kill you will also be killing someone who's supposed to die. In other words, you murdered somebody, so you're supposed to die. So the one who kills you is also killing someone who's supposed to die. So this is the way Kedarka, he translates the Mishnah in a sort of unique way.
What does the Al-Shech do with this Tana?
The Al-Shech teaches the Mishnah, the Tana, the opposite. He says, because you murdered others, therefore someone was permitted to kill you before your time. And the person who killed you will also die before his time. Someone will kill him. In other words, Rechaim Elazar attaches it that the person died in his time, and others would attach it before his time. So it's a very basic machlaikis. I like to mention what I believe as a Rav Tzadik. He says there are certain concepts, philosophical concepts in Yiddishkeit for which we have no clear answer. Because part of the Aveda is struggling with let's say bechira. Part of the war of avodas Hashem is to struggle with it, to work hard on it, and not to. It's not clear. It's never clear. A person never knows if he accomplished everything he should. Okay, let's move on to Mishnah Zayin. Who are Ya'imer? The Tana continues. And a lot of space here. I think Rav Gamliel is still speaking. Most of the Tanaim till now got one Mishnah. He's up to Mishnah Zayin. And he started Mishnah Beis. Okay. He had pull with Ravenu HaKadosh. Marbe Basa Marbe Rima. I don't know if you like to hear this. Marbe Basa Marbe Rima. The more flesh, the more worms. Got the idea. Marbe Nechasim Marbe Daiga. The more property you have, the more worries you have. So if you have a lot of property, just give it to me. And we'll take care of it. Marbe Noshim Marbe Kshafim. Too many wives, too much magic in the house. Understand that. Marbe shvachis, marbe zima. Too many maids in the house, you'll have snus in the house. That we do understand. Marbe avodim, marbe gazel. Too many servants in the house, you'll have a lot of geneva. I think that's also easy to understand. Marbe toira, marbe chayim. Sounds easy. The more toira, the more life. Marbe yeshiva, marbe chachba. The more you sit and study, the more wise you'll be. Marbe eitza, marbe tavuna. The more you seek counsel, the wiser you'll be. Marbe tzedakah, marbe shalom. The more charity you give, the more peace you'll have. Now that seems to be not a logical consequence, but a sort of a schar. If you give tzedakah, you'll have shalom. So we have here a number of these. Rechav Elazar will comment on a few of them. The Mishnah ends, Kana shem tov, kana la'atzmai. If you get a good name, so you have a real kinyan. You really acquire something. If you acquire Divrei Torah, that's a key to Olam Haba.
Okay. He got this probably from Shem Tov.
That's very nice. So Kana Shem Tov is a good name. Okay. Now let's see. Chaim Volozhin makes a few comments here, brief ones. Let's see. Marbe Nechasim, Marbe Daiga. The bottom. Marbe Nechasim, Marbe Daiga. What does that mean? If you have more property, you have more worries. Most people would say, okay, I'll take the property, I'll take the worries. Like, let me win the lottery and I'll worry about it, what to do with it. So he says, Ki hakol nigzer miyatzliachim lav. Rag daiga maisiv bishtadluse lahar bin l'chaisav. That really HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you what you deserve anyway. By working overtime, you just cause yourself extra unnecessary worry. And nobody dies and acquires everything he wants. And therefore, the shtadl should be measured. It should be measured according to the person. Because just to do it excessively causes a person to have worry. I think it is a pasuk in Mishlei that the sleep of a worker is a good sleep. But the many nechasim doesn't allow the rich man to sleep. So there's something to that. I mean, we still all want the nesayin of the rich man. Shlomo Melech said, "Rosh va'aisher al titen li." He doesn't want poverty. He doesn't want wealth. It's good to have enough money to pay all your bills, and then a couple of dollars left around to hang it around afterwards. So it's marbe nechasim, marbe dag. Now marbe toira, marbe chayim. He says something very interesting. He says, "Av sheniknis al yedei yisurim." Marbe toira is not just you sit around and have Torah. You marbe Torah by staying up late at night, getting up early in the morning, avoiding excessive pleasure. So, av sheniktas ayde yisurim mekomak imarbe chayim. The Mishnah is saying that although it would seem that somebody who expends himself on Torah, we use the expression, the Torah is niktas b'mishememis asmayaleha, person ignores his personal needs, nevertheless, it's marbe chayim. Here, Reb Tzadik has one of his famous comments. Reb Tzadik writes that things that in the physical world are opposites are very often in the spiritual world compatible. He gives a couple of examples. He says if you keep Shabbos, logically, those who keep Shabbos should have 1/7 the net value of those who don't keep Shabbos, after all. Those who keep Shabbos and Yom Tov, that's I guess 1/6. And you're 1/6 of the year, you're not able to work. Everybody else can make money more. So logically, if you limit the amount of days that you can work, you should have less money. So the question is whether we take a pool of Shabbos observers and non-Shabbos observers, whether the Shabbos observers are making an income of, call it a sixth less in income. So it doesn't seem that way, because even though physically one should follow, but when it's a spiritual thing, the point of cause and consequence are not the same. He says the same thing about giving tzedakah, that you would think someone gives away tzedakah, he's a poorer man. And yet, we understand that if you give tzedakah, you don't lose. That you, Kadosh Baruch Hu, compensates a person. There's a similar idea in the Rabbeinu Bachya about Kippur Ave'im. Rabbeinu Bachya says that Kippur Ave'im takes time. So you would think, if you spend Kippur Ave'im, you have less time for yourself. So the Torah gives Arichas Yomim for Kippur Ave'im, so that you get your time back. If they got married, I spent, Friday, I eat lunch with my mother. I think in the 30-something years I'm married, I don't think I missed a Friday when we were both in Brooklyn that I didn't go over either for lunch, or if I couldn't go for lunch, I went for breakfast on Friday. So as our children got older and the house got busier, it was a little unfair to my wife to go have a party, you know, Erev Shabbos. So I told my wife, you have a choice, but I showed her the Rabbeinu Bachya. I said, even though, you know, you're going to miss me for an hour or two on Friday afternoon, but Rabbeinu Bachya says, you know, you get it back. So she said, okay, you know, she'll take it on the end, on the end of it. But, so I don't know. So it's an idea that sometimes when the consequence in the physical world seems one way, the spiritual value makes a difference. That's what he says here about Marba Torah, Marba Chaim. People who push themselves in studying Torah don't necessarily have adverse health effects. Marba Yeshiva, Marba Chachma. Ki bi Yeshiva yesh harbei shem rabbeisav. K'may sh'arayin mishna dal. We said that in Yeshiva you have all three. You have Rebbeim, Talmidim, and Chaverim. And there's something a person learns from all three. Marba Eitza, Marba Tvuno. This one I like very much. It's a nice twist. Listen to what he says. On asking advice, finding counsel, and becoming wiser. He says, Margala Bapumadinchi, people say, now listen to the saying, Sha'al Eitza, Va'asei Kisichlacha. Ask advice, and then follow your own seichel, follow your own intelligence. Now, when I read this, I would thought, okay, he's gonna hammer this as wrong. You know, people say it. But no, he says it's correct. Now listen to what he says, beautiful. It says, Lafiza Lachaira Eitza Lama. Why are you asking an Eitza? You say, ask an Eitza and do what you want. Like a wife, ask the husband, what should I do? And then she does the other thing, right? She has advice and she does something else. So why is she asking? So he says the following. He says something beautiful. He says, Ach Yuvan Pashat, Ki Ishma Bechutz, Lo Yavan Kal Panimi Yaseinyin, Vamashanay Yav Tzemaisai. If you're asking advice about a personal issue, an outsider can't really know all the nuances of the issue. He'll understand a bit. So too, if he escapes it from a second person. The people asking advice is the one who really understands. But he doesn't have the intelligence of all those with whom he discusses it. Okay. By talking to numerous people, and getting their idea, mizema'at, a little here, a little there, kamashakasav and mishlei, usishua barayv yayetz. Help comes with many eitzes. Zeu marbe eitza, yedekach marbe tavuna. Shakosh, sechel, shakol ish. You get a little advice here and there, and then you're able to put it together yourself. And then you'll be able to put it together and understand it. I think it's a very beautiful idea. And one more, Marbet Tzedakah, Marbet Shalom, Avshin Nirish and Nisim Mois and Nitzrachim La'Isa Gadol. Same idea as we said earlier. Even though it seems physically that you're losing by it, Mekomokim Ein Rachas V'Shalom Magiyalei Mizeh. We have this idea that a person doesn't lose from giving tzedakah. The Rambam writes in his Halacha Sefer in Shulchan Aruch bring, Ein Adam Misani Min HaTzedakah. That a person gives tzedakah the way Halacha requires, a person doesn't become poor for giving tzedakah.
Why do they say you're not supposed to give more than...
Oh, so that's a very good kasha. I used this to Rav Palm in his last days when he was in the hospital, we were learning about Bava Basra. I said, it says in Shulchan Aruch that a person doesn't become poor from tzedakah. It also says you shouldn't give more than a fifth because you might become poor and have to be mutala latzibur. So it seems to be a contradiction. So Rav Palm answered that halacha is not based on skula. Even a true school. Halach is based on the physical world. So halach is, don't give excessively because you may turn poor. We have an idea. So that's a davar schooly. But halach has to work with the world the way it is. I should add, the Chavetz Chaim writes that if people spend excessively on their homes, they could spend excessively on tzedakah too. But typically, he says, shouldn't give more than a fifth.